transfer pricing. We are recording at Lake House in Lake Nona, Florida at our KPMG Ignition Center. And we are here for a very special episode that we have every year. This is, I think, our third or fourth time to have our annual Taxing Times episode. And this is our opportunity to take back at the previous year of what happened in tax and how it impacted transfer pricing. This is also in correspondence with an article that we published about our year-end considerations. And so lots to talk about with my very esteemed colleagues. So I'm very happy to have Jesse Coleman here with me from our Washington National Tax and Principal. So thank you, Jesse, for being here and an author of our article.
Thanks for having me, Brittany. Excited to be here.
Very happy to have you. And Jesse will be offering from a Washington National Tax or W&T perspective some of the thoughts that we've had from this article over the past year. And we also have Doug Labadie, Managing Director in our Detroit office, and he'll be here to share with us from the field perspective, so what you're hearing from your clients.
So that's right. We've got lots to unpack, so happy to be here.
Certainly. Thank you both. So we're kind of structuring this in sort of a two-part. So we'll talk first about from the U.S. perspective, obviously the big news there with One Big Beautiful Bill, and or OB3 as we call it, some of those impacts on transfer pricing, and then we'll expand to look at the rest of the world. So as I had mentioned, Jesse will provide some of that perspective, and then we'll hear from the field. So on that, let's dive right into the United States. One Big Beautiful Bill.
Jesse. OB3.
OB3. Yeah. Talk to us about it. Give us a high-level overview.
So OB3, 4th of July, so we can all remember when it was enacted. I think the kind of headline news for us was that a lot of the international provisions that we have been watching for kind of changed. I would say changed significantly in some forms, but didn't kind of overhaul in and of itself, but also became permanent. So, we had, the ones that kind of we always talk about every year on this podcast, Brittany, right? We've been talking about how, they were going to change significantly or go away, essentially, but they're all kind of staying in a form. So, there was FIDI, GILTI, and BEAT that we kind of continually talk about. We can talk about how those changed a little bit too, but then, there were other things that kind of our clients are also really excited about. So kind of items that happened under 174, and then as well as kind of bonus depreciation, 163J, I guess the DAW came back. So like a lot happened and probably too much to unpack for like this podcast. So maybe we just take like what we've been seeing for most. Does that work for you?
I think that sounds great. And I'd be curious, Doug, from your perspective, because what people in the field are talking about the most is obviously what's going to resonate with most of their listeners and viewers now.
Yeah, I think the one I've been seeing the most is the opportunity around today and that being permanent now and the preferential rate there. So I got a lot of clients that are already doing the modeling, thinking about ways where is value being created? Are there things, high-value functions that are being performed in the U.S. that aren't currently being charged for, that we can implement a charge and take advantage of that reduced rate. And also, a lot of companies considering bringing IAP onshore from foreign jurisdictions, which it's a good time to consider that, especially if you have a foreign IP structure with, light dempy substance, or it's more disruptive or costly to the business to keep substance there, really looking at U.S. as a place to bring that IP back and take advantage of the rate.
And maybe helpful, Brittany, just to talk about kind of like what changed to like, because it was always good, right? So like FIDI, or now FIDE, I guess, as we're now calling it. It always had a good rate associated with it. But what's really happened is the base has gotten bigger because there's no longer kind of QBI associated with it. And then there are certain deductions you would have to make, or allocations, I should say, to your FIDE income. And that's, especially R&D and interest, and those you no longer make. So essentially, we've got this like bigger base. I mean, your effective tax rate on it is actually like slightly higher than it used to be, but still like the fact that this is a permanent change has really kind of excited a lot of people. So if you think of, right, like the kind of baseline rate would be 14%. You look at kind of pillar two around the world at 15, just keeping those two numbers, maybe the numbers are not always like 15 and 14. We probably won't get into that today. It seems like a great time for companies to consider the things that Doug has talked about, like from the, right, you've got light substance in places that you've been trying to get people to move to and you're really struggling. You got a lot of people here, maybe it's time to bring your IP back to the U.S.
I have long joked that FIDE sounds like FIDE that went on study abroad and it's now time to come back home. So that's the contribution I have. So yeah, your grandpeeds have fun on its sojourn.
Okay. Yeah, and if you have the rate, you can even get to a rate that's below 14%, right? If you with the allocations of interest and R&D being taken out of the equation, get the deduction at the higher 21% rate, it can be very beneficial.
I think actually that's a good transition actually into looking at the rest of the world. And the OECD has been quite active. I mean, Pillar 2 is like the elephant in the room that everyone's trying to contend with. So Jesse, sort of what's been your experience and response on what you're seeing there?
Well, so it's a lot of wait and see, right? Like Pillar 2, it's a little unsure how that's going to go forward. So, right. So in for a lot of reasons, right, they kind of a side-by-side agreement was reached, by the G7 on Pillar 2. It's side-by-side, meaning that, the U.S. will kind of have its own system that will kind of work in parallel with Pillar 2. And not just the U.S., I think. It'll be, you can have a system like the U.S. for any country, and that could be determined to be okay. But we don't really know like what that system will look like, how that will work. And they're still negotiating that essentially at the inclusive framework. Kind of the headline is that QDMTTs are still here. So for example, Singapore, they've got a QDMTT, which means that they would tax Singapore income at 15%. So everyone's waiting and seeing, right? Like, does that go away? Does that stay? How does the dynamic change? I don't think anybody knows yet.
Yeah. Same with Switzerland and Ireland. A lot of these offshore structures are still get caught by the QDMTT. So there's still a lot to be thought about in that perspective as well.
Yeah, so I think a lot of it, like what's going to happen? We hear something's coming out by the end of the year. So I think we're kind of like waiting and seeing, like, what does that something look like? What does that look like? And then like, what steps do like the Irelands and the Singapores and the Switzerlands make? I mean, I don't, my crystal ball's a bit broken, so I just have no idea.
Well, while we're looking at the crystal ball and anticipating things coming from the OECD, we are expecting that Chapter 7 on intergroup services to be revisited. So any predictions or anticipations from what we might see in the coming year?
I mean, I think it's really hard. Like, we have a wish list, right? That's a better way to say it. So like the benefits test, right? Like they're going to look at that and hopefully provide some additional guidance, because one thing that I know I struggle with, my clients struggle with, is, they think that, they charge out a service. They think there is evidence that a benefit has been provided, but, the counter jurisdiction doesn't always agree. Yeah. So it would be great to get more consistency on that.
Yeah, there's a lot of very aggressive tax authorities that police that a lot harder than others. And I think they're trying to get some guidance on how best to apply that more broadly would be good. And I know that another work stream around Chapter 7 is guidance around high value services. So I think that'll be very good for our clients as well, in terms of being able to move the discussion beyond just cost and where is really the value being created. And, or there's charges from the central headquarters that we can prove and argue that it's not just a routine administrative task. It's really a strategic function that allows the local entity to, produce a product or control their market risk, and that should be charged for it. So it kind of goes hand in hand with, trying to charge for additional high value services to take advantage of FIDE.
And I think timing also is going to be really interesting too, because, as we've seen, AI has expanded, within our industry and then also with the clients that we're working with. So how is that going to impact intergroup services? Looking at, headcount, maybe that's maybe not the most appropriate allocation key. I mean, there's just so many things to consider. So it will be curious to see what the OECD comes up with and how they try to provide guidance. Yeah. So, and then of course, transparency is always key. And so public C5C is officially here. So Jesse, some thoughts and reflections.
And we've been talking about this for years, right?
Yeah, for finally here.
Yeah. So I mean, the EU directive has been around for a couple of years. But really 2025 is kind of like that key year that it's going to apply kind of uniformly. Although obviously there were some countries that notably adopted early. For this year that we are currently in, within 12 months or less for many companies, they're going to need to produce some form of a country by country report. And that's not just limited to kind of, you can call it EU country by country reporting, really, but it's not. EU country by country reporting, right? Because U.S. multinationals need to actually do EU country by country reporting. But essentially, they'll have to break out EU countries and then countries that are on kind of a specific EU list. And then they can decide, right, what else they're going to do. So they can put all the rest of the world all together. They could decide how they want to tell their larger story about what the data looks like. So I think right now companies are trying to grapple with, what's that snapshot look like and what story do I want to tell? And then I wouldn't be remiss as also, Australia is also in the mix too with their own public country by country reporting.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm talking with a tech company next week just to think about what's going to go in the tax strategy document for Australia. You want to have some consistency with other public statements that have been made, but you also want to take a step back and what is our data telling us and what story do we want it to show and how do we control that narrative?
It's interesting you mentioned AI. I mean, that's a little bit frightening to me, right? That now it's going to be easier for people to analyze. I guess not enough people, right? You write a persona and you analyze a bunch of data and something will come out. So it makes me a little nervous about what the public and what other people are going to make of this data that's published.
Right. I mean, then that's what we've said, because C-by-C information is so nuanced. It takes so much time to understand what the numbers really mean. And AI can be quite authoritative and also wrong. And it's really easy to misinterpret some of those numbers. So, and on that note, actually, documentation, obviously, there's going to continue to be a focus. You're in Detroit. You're close to our Canadian buddies. They came out recently with some...
Yeah, hot off the presses. The recent federal budget has some measures to make the documentation requirements a lot stricter, and especially around financial transactions, as well as kind of look at things at a substance over form perspective as well. So I think a lot of companies are going to have to grapple with what that means from a Canadian perspective, and still needs to be approved, but every indication is that it will move forward as proposed. And so that could be a big change for documentation requirements. And we're seeing that across the globe as well, in Germany and Belgium and Costa Rica. So definitely a trend towards stricter requirements and tax authorities wanting more information and proof of substance to back up the numbers.
We have live in taxing times indeed. So we anticipate having this conversation again next year. Before we close it out, obviously, we could not talk about the taxing times of this past year without acknowledging the big T, which is tariffs. And so I'm curious to hear from you, Doug. Tell us about tariffs. What's been your experience this past year?
It's been a fun year. A lot of uncertainty and ongoing trade tension. I think a lot of tax departments are dealing with tariffs more than they ever thought they would have to. So dealing with that uncertainty and going beyond just acceptance of the duties, we're actually seeing companies starting to use transfer pricing as a strategic way to mitigate the tariffs, whether that be a year-end adjustment to reduce the customs value or looking at things like first sale for export, where you can declare the value based on a transaction earlier in the supply chain and cut out the middleman's margin on that, or companies even going the extra step and thinking about how can we reconfigure our supply chain to reduce the amount of goods that are crossing the border from high tariff jurisdictions. So it's been a fun year.
Well, they say, may you live in interesting times, and we continue to here at Taxing Times and the Exploring Transfer Pricing Podcast. So thank you both so much for joining me, and look forward to, another exciting year and joining again next year. So thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.